Welcome, my friends, to Fired Up, your source for conservative talk. I am William Del Pilar, a conservative Latino swimming against the cultural tide in a sea filled with liberalism, progressivism, socialism, communism, and authoritarianism. Did I leave out fascism? That too. However, I come every week with receipts to shred the doomsayers' playbook and cast them back to the depths of heck. Okay, that's over the top. But this week we talk war. Iran's been poking the bear for decades, and MAGA's standing tall with Trump, not fracturing like Tucker and his gloom and doom choir predict. These armchair prophets cry, "We're going to war," while ignoring Iran's terrorism spree and Trump's "no more wars" mantra. Talk about selective amnesia. So strap on your heat-resistant thermals, because the G-Man, whenever he shows up, and I are bringing the heat with a sarcastic smackdown of their half-truths, from proxy attacks to nuclear games, with a Panama twist that'll make you go, and think, "Damn, I love me some rice and beans." Welcome back, everybody. First of all, thank you for being here. I am back after many weeks. Last week was my first show back. This is my second one, and I'm glad to be back. Before we get going, I do need to do some administrative work for the company here. So make sure you bookmark grumblingsmedia.com. Grumblingsmedia.com. That is where you will find not only this conservative podcast, but my California conservative talk, our libertarian podcast, and our straight up sports shows. Oh, I forgot, and my cultural political podcast. You can find them all at grumblingsmedia.com. And you are probably listening to me on one of these platforms, but please follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, under the handle Grumblings Media. And as always, make sure you like and share this podcast after you watch it. But what you can do right now is give me the thumbs up, people. That's always appreciative. And hopefully I will have my guest, the G-Man, showing up soon. You know how family life is, people. You have planned trips. Hey, I'll be here by this time. Next thing you know, you're waiting for your family or yourself at times 2 hours later. So he's going to try to jump on here in a bit. But until then, I am going to handle the show, which I've done plenty of times. And hey, I love hearing myself talk. So it's a win-win. So what I want to talk about today, obviously, is Iran. I want to talk about the media. Social media is so powerful. It does push certain narratives. People are talking about a split with MAGA. Nonsense. There's no split. And we'll talk about, again, with the receipts as to those who claim a split. And we'll look at the results of those who claim a split when there is none. We'll talk about the nonsense of we're going to war. Trump kept us out of wars. He would drop a bomb here or there to show the might of America, which for some reason many people do not like, but they live in la-la land, because the reality of the world is it's not really a good place. You get despots, dictators. Hey, that's our own country as well, you know. But for all our warts, we do live in the greatest country in this world, which I find ironic, because Democrats hate the flag, yet they're like, "Open the borders." Little hypocrisy there, or I forget the term there, where double talk, but oxymoron maybe, I don't know. But let's get into it. What I want to do is give a little brief history. As I said, you know, America has had its wars, and dealing with Iran, most of you weren't born at that time, myself included, but there were some warts with imperialism. Not really us. At that point, it was the UK and British Petroleum. But I want to give a little bit of history and then get into the fall. And be careful what you wish for. The Shah may have been more westernized and more beneficial to the Western nations than the current regime. But women were free to wear what they wanted to do. They could wear blue jeans, watch Dallas, watch American shows. When the Khomeinis took over, whoo! Man, they were covered with burqas, and you never saw their face again. So let's talk about, first of all, let me give you an overview of the protracted undeclared war we are having with Iran. And that's what people don't like to talk about. That's what they never talk about. We are in an unofficial war with Iran. We have been since 1979 when they took our hostages and we had a spineless, worthless excuse for a POTUS named Jimmy Carter, who also gave away the Panama Canal to my brethren. Well, us Panamanians were like, keep it, because we knew how corrupt our government was at the time. But the U.S. and Iran are locked in an undeclared war. It's rooted in early U.S. interventions, and it's escalated through the decades of mutual aggression, mostly from Iran, but we have struck at them at times. So regarding the Iranian actions, their support for militant groups targeting U.S. interests, Iran, through their proxies. They've also had engagements, obviously, we've seen throughout the whole Middle East, what they call regional conflicts that are in opposition to U.S. objectives. These are facts. I'm not saying what's right and what's wrong, but they are just basic facts. There have been plots against U.S. figures, notably an assassination attempt on President Trump that the FBI DOJ came out. And the mainstream media, who is not a friend of Mr. Donald Trump, also reported on. And there's been U.S. responses, economic sanctions to pressure Iran to no avail, military interventions to counter their influence in the Middle East. If Iran has their way, what they want to do is they want to literally control the world, the region, and then spread Islam, you convert or die, using the whole Middle East as their basis. Christianity, once thriving in the Middle East, is down to under single digits. And as we are seeing in Syria right now, they're beheading, killing. They're doing everything they can with Christians, and our government tends to ignore that. And a lot of that has to do with the spread of the convert or die Islam that Iran promotes. So the U.S. has also had, obviously, covert operations to disrupt Iranian activities. And the Mossad, actually, our allies over there, are really good at that. In fact, the Mossad is arguably our key source of information as they are embedded deeply into these countries. There's a great miniseries on Netflix that talks about one of these individuals, I want to say from the 60s or 70s, that embedded himself. A great series for you to watch. But these actions confirm a prolonged state of undeclared warfare we've had going back and forth. I want to say it's covert, but it really isn't. The news reports on this stuff. We see the regional conflicts. We see the attack on our soldiers. So it's an undeclared war. When you kill an American soldier, technically that's a declaration of war against us. When you attempt an assassination attempt on our POTUS or high-ranking officials, that's an act of war. So we have been in an unstated war with Iran since 1979. Them taking our hostages was an act of war. You know, then there's a nuclear threat and geopolitical implications. Iran has nuclear ambitions. And to defend the naysayers, they're right. Since the 1980s, oh, Iran is close, close, close. But I got news for you. Not that they were given permission and have been helped to reach the stage. They are literally on the verge. But what is on the verge? Is it tomorrow, a year from now, 2 years from now? Nobody knows. So when the naysayers say, well, they've been saying that since the 80s, true. But they have never been more closer than ever than today because of the help of the Biden and Obama regime as well. And we'll talk about that also. So this is heightened tensions with the U.S. and allies because Iran wants to genocide the Jewish nation. And they have said that more than once publicly. So a nuclear Iran would trigger a regional arms race as well. Saudi Arabia, for example, said we have no desire to have a nuclear weapon. Iran gets one, we're going to get one. You know, so that's what that means by a regional arms race. And they threaten Israel's existence, and they also endanger U.S. security. Y'all remember Chernobyl? You know, that debacle created a nuclear cloud. You know, and that goes throughout the world. You know, so there's always those issues as well, which made me always wonder. You know, we did testing, you know, of these nuclear devices, and we took them underground. But man, nuclear weaponization is a quick way to end human civilization. You know, so all this in the eyes of many necessitates decisive action over diplomacy alone. And the IAEA, which is called the International Atomic Energy everything I told you about the nuclear site of Iran has been confirmed by the International Atomic Energy Agency. Or not confirmed, but they're the authority that has said this. And it's a UN organization that promotes peaceful nuclear energy use, and they verify compliance with non-proliferation agreements. Not too much liking, meaning they say they do, but people wonder, do they really? But they're the ones. So it's not an American. It's not the CIA, the FBI. It's the IAEA that has stated what I just said regarding Iran and their want and desire for a nuclear. They say to help them out, which is part of the process, but also to create bombs. They have the IAEA report 2024, which is a big report that a lot of people sit there and talk about. Hey, my producer's chiming in there. Thank you, Big John, there. We are good to go on all our platforms. Again, make sure you like and share. Oh, I'm sorry. You thumbs up this podcast as we live stream. So again, the IAEA 2024, that is a report that kind of states all this about Iran. Say, yeah, they want it for peaceful use, but they also want it to create bombs. You know? So as you can tell, this is a very complex scenario here, you know, and that's why I get so frustrated when people play the black and white game. No, not race here. I'm talking about they view it as a black and white issue. It's not a black and white issue. You tell that to our dead soldiers. You tell that to the civilians who were captured in 79. Some are still alive. You know, you tell that by the proliferation of convert or die Islam they push. This isn't good or bad. This is fact. This is what they do in terms of their religion. And there's fear when you have zealots running a country. Look, I have a fear of God in the sense you want to do good, et cetera, et cetera. But I also want the church out of my government. I have, as a former Catholic, I have seen what the Catholic Church has done throughout its 2,000-year existence in meddling in political affairs. And it's never good because from their perspective, all these zealots, it comes from the word of God, you know, and that's not the best way to run a government, especially in America when you have various religions, various Buddhism, you know, heck, even Christianity, you know, Protestants, Methodists, Catholics, and then you have it in the Middle East of Islam, and then the Islam that Iran is promoting is not good for the world. If you want to be Islam, Muslim and come in this country, we have something called the Constitution that overrides Sharia law. And that's one of the problems I personally have with Islam in the United States. But if you want to pray to Allah, that's fine. The only thing I sit there and say, no bells at 4 or 5 a.m. in the morning. So, again, this is very complex. It's driven by competing Middle East geopolitical interests from all the nations, not only there, but from Western nations, because that's where we derive quite a bit of oil. But that is changing with Brazil, with Venezuela, with other countries, with shale. So that is changing. But the Middle East still poses a great geopolitical interest and value. But on a side note, even Saudi Arabia sees that, hey, oil is not going to be here every day. We're eventually going to run out, or there's going to be new energies. So they've been diversifying for the last decade or so into other areas. So when that does happen, they're prepared. But regardless, the Middle East right now is exacerbated by ideological divides. And all this has a global impact. It poses a major threat to international stability. You know, I mean, the Middle East has been a hotspot since I was a child in 1979, and going all the way back to the 50s when the conglomerates out of the Western nations went over there and did not treat the people pretty or the countries very well as they took control of the oil deposits and with Iran specifically. That happened, and one reason why we are in this mess we are. But ongoing hostilities persist without a formal war declaration. So is there a need for diplomacy? Of course, there's an urgent need for diplomatic resolutions. But that's hindered by Iran's own theocratic belief, and that's rooted in Shia Islam, that deceiving non-Muslims is divinely sanctioned. And that obviously erodes trust in nuclear talks. And that's one reason I'm always leery when dealing with a country like Iran. They will openly lie and do something else. And in their minds, hey, that's okay because it's the will of Allah. Right or wrong, that's a belief system they have. So diplomacy can be tricky, you know, and they have a history of violating nuclear agreements like the JCPOA, which shows diplomacy's ineffectiveness. So you got to look at them from a realistic, and the JCPOA is the agreement that the UN can have people go in to check where they're at to make sure they're on the up and up with their nuclear growth or in terms of what they're doing on that. And they kind of break that all the time. So understanding Iran's nuclear deceptions or religious ideology is critical for de-escalation. Or in this case, as Israel is doing, is saying, enough. We destroy your proxies. You are at your weakest point, and we are no longer going to play defense. We are going on offense, and they want regime change. You know, and I separate them from Trump. You know, Trump just wants to work out a deal. Trump's thinking of, look, like him or not, President Trump is thinking of his legacy. He wants to be seen as the peacemaking president. His actions of no war, of only, but see, he's pragmatic. This is why I try to tell conservatives. He aligns with most conservative values now, but he's not truly a conservative. He's more common sense, wants to do what's necessary to give and take. That's why I get frustrated at our deficit crisis of $36 trillion. I don't think Trump really cares about that as much as he cares about getting deals done and getting the GDP and economy moving, thinking that's going to counter it. But we better get that under control here sooner than later. But anyway, getting back to Iran. So understanding Iran's nuclear deceptions, understanding their religious ideology, that is key. And that's why I sit there saying this isn't a black and white issue. And people who play it as a black and white issue, and the ones that frustrate me the most are the Christians. You know, because they're the ones who should understand, hey, that we got an ideology issue here, more so than the buffoons at times who don't want to look at it as a black and white and think they can read a book or watch a TV show and they understand the situation. One thing I was blessed with growing up is my dad was part of the Special Forces community. I got to know a lot of individuals from the Middle East, Jordanians, mostly Jordanians, were in our family circle, but other countries from Saudi Arabia. There was a time in the late 70s, early 80s, as Saudi Arabia was opening up, a lot of family members, not my family, but friends of our family, were going back and forth. So I didn't see it directly, but it was an interesting flavor of meeting individuals from these countries. You know, and some of them served in the military. The Jordanian I mentioned, he served in the military alongside my dad, you know, Navid, that was his name, Navid. I'll never forget, but I was a small child at the time. But the point being is, we must understand the situations, and people who don't make the effort, don't trust those people. Don't trust them. They're going to give you something from a westernized mindset. And that's not how you can look at the Mideast. You have to understand their way of life, their culture. The problem with America is when people don't get out, when they don't travel, they don't realize, hey, life is different in this country. You know how many people I've met through the military mostly, but they go to a different country like, damn, I'm glad I live in the U.S. I didn't realize that could happen to me, or that could happen, or that could happen. And it can, and it does to others. So I'm not sure. I don't think we got the G-man here yet. I'll keep looking over. When I see me look on the side, I'm looking to see if he's ready to enter. But anyway, so what are some of the historical roots and key incidents that makes me say we are in an unofficial war? Well, since the 1979 Iranian Revolution, Iran's regime, they've labeled us as the Great Satan. And they vowed to destroy not only Israel, but the U.S., you know, I don't know who they view as the top Satan. I would imagine they view us as a great Satan because of our size of power, but their hatred is much more profound for the Jewish nation, Israel. And this was echoed in Khomeini's 1979 call to, quote, wipe out, unquote, Israel. You know, Khomeini's 2015, quote, death to America, unquote, endorsement includes day chants. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, so I apologize. But so this hostility does stem from a rejection of Western values, secularism, meaning non-religious government. You know, obviously the Iranians, they're a full-fledged religious government. So democracy, they term West toxification by Khomeini. That's what he termed it, West toxification. See, this is what I mean by receipts. I'm not going to say, oh, he said this. Believe me, this is what the research bears out. You know, and then obviously the U.S. support for Israel, obviously the proxies they back and how they take any type of Western help to help individuals living in the Gaza, and they turn infrastructure help and those materials into weapons, and then they turn around and say, you're oppressing Palestinians. No, we're not. No, the Israelis are not. So, and then there's the veiled threats like Khomeini's 2012 devastating response to Israel, you know, wipeout claim, 2021 level Tel Aviv vow, you know. So they're always promising catastrophic destruction of Israel, and they're always professing their catastrophic capabilities. And what some people interpret that to mean nuclear intent. Then there's the state media, their TV, the IRGC leaders, like Hossein Salami's 2023 pledge to, quote, end the Zionist regime, unquote. So that amplifies the anti-U.S. Israel rhetoric. You know, there's a saying, believe them when they say what they say. And Iran is one of those, believe them. You know, so Iran's 60% uranium enrichment by 2024 per the IAEA, paired with erasing Israel threats, that kind of implies nuclear intimidation at best, at worst, nuclear genocide as a scare tactic. And the problem here is when you have religious zealots, I mean, these people may think, hey, but Allah will protect us, you know. You know, or you get the ones here in the U.S., we've had our own Waco issues. You know, God has spoken to me, or Jim Jones. Hey, drink the Kool-Aid, brother. It's good stuff. You know, so religious zealots come in every religion. And right now you have a whole country ruled by them, and Syria too, probably now, you know. But Iran does have some reason for having some of these historical grievances. There was a coup in 1953. And it was really led by the UK, but the US was involved, and it orchestrated the overthrow of the Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh because he nationalized Iran's oil. And what they did is they did the coup and they reinstated the Shah Pahlavi, and he was a pro-Western monarch. He's the guy who eventually got deposed in 1979. Now, to give you an understanding of how that government worked, think of the UK, where when the prime minister gets elected, he has to go get the blessing of the king or queen. You know, I bless you. But the reality is the people have elected him, you know, or the king or queen of UK, the England, can sit there and say, hey, it's time for you to resign. We're telling you, you got to resign. But they don't have any power to back it up. Well, that was, to give you an analogy, that was pretty much how the Iranian situation with the Shah and the duly elected parliament members were. So what happened is the Shah was more symbolic. You know, the Shah had certain powers, but pretty much the prime minister ran the government. And they went to nationalize the oil fields. And why? Well, British Petroleum, you know, and just to let you know, British Petroleum, we're talking in the 50s, but their ancestors, their kids, their siblings, their sires, their offspring, they're the ones who fund Gavin Newsom. All his money comes from Getty Oil. You probably heard the term Getty Oil, you know. So, but anyway, British Petroleum. Maybe I may be confusing it, though. I apologize if I am. You know, but British Petroleum were the ones. They did not give Iran a great deal. Yep, and my producer's telling me I am conflating the two. Damn you, Donald Sutherland, in a great miniseries on Fox FX talking about Getty Oil. Yes, so two different corporations. But the point being is they did not give Iran a fair deal. They did not want to negotiate. You know, it's one thing, you know, we talk free market all the time. And Milton Friedman said it best, you know, sure, okay, I admit it's evil, but you tell me what's better. The free market and capitalism. There isn't. But when you get big conglomerates and you get the government to be their goons, you know, smaller countries or countries that weren't as far ahead as Western nations were, they tend to abuse other countries. And that's kind of what happened. And so the Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh, you know, took over, nationalized it with the people's support, and then they were overthrown. It was led by the UK with a CIA support. I'm not sure if the actual CIA was around at that point in time officially in 1953. And the reason I say that is for my Panamanian upbringing, there was a war that was orchestrated between the CIA and military intelligence in the 60s, with the CIA eventually coming out on top. But they were literally one of the, you know, siblings of one another. But the point is, the US and UK orchestrated the overthrow of this individual. So that left people with a sour taste with the Shah. But the Shah was very westernized. I mean, you look at some of the pictures, you see the beautiful women, you see them in their miniskirts, in their bikinis of the 60s, rock music. They were very, very westernized. And again, growing up, we knew, my parents rather knew some individuals from Iran. And then in 1979, it all changed. The revolution, they overthrew the Shah, with Khomeini establishing a theocratic anti-U.S. regime from day one, and it was marked by the U.S. embassy hostage crisis. You know, so that was the beginning of the what's the term I'm looking for? A non-official war with the United States by Iran. Now, again, we weren't the best of nations. We were the corporations were using Iran for their own pretty much corporate greed, you know, and control. And but be careful what you wish for, because as corrupt as the Shah was, or as much in the pocket of Western nations as people want to say, and that's a gray area, meaning most Americans don't know how the Shah ruled, how the people lived, etc. What they know about is, oh, he was in the pockets because he was more westernized. That's that. There's truth to that, but it's not as black and white as they try to make it out to be. You can have ties to other countries, but still rule your own country very well. You know, Saudi Arabia is a great example. Well, a great example of that, and they're progressing. There's actually spots you can now drink alcohol. So the natural evolution of humanity, these countries will eventually on their own grow. So the Shah had done a pretty good job in westernizing or modernizing with a secular government. And then the Shah, and then the Khomeini came in. Be careful what you went for. You went from miniskirts and bikinis to wearing a full-blown wool burqa, sweating like a pig, not being able to get educated. There's video of women who don't have the burqa on, or even temporarily, where they put it on. And they have literally Gestapo coming in, throwing them in the van, taking them to detention centers. You know? So be careful what you wish for. They went from an up-and-coming country to pretty much set back 500,000 years in their philosophical beliefs. And I'm going to talk about it here in a bit, but there's about 80% of Iran want that government out. And then for all you people who go, well, why don't they just overthrow them? Easier said than done. You know, it's creating regime change and starting a civil war, especially in today's era when they have all the guns. There's a reason governments don't want us Americans to have our Second Amendment. The Japanese said it best, you know, we invade America, every American has five guns or something like that, you know. So there's power in having an armed citizenry in keeping bad government from eventually becoming complete despots. That's not the case in Iran, you know, and ironically, it was funny when Obama took over, I forget what they called it, when all these countries in the Middle East were revolting. The only country he did not support or help out was Iran. You know, so they were ready to try to revolt there, and they were begging for U.S. help, and it never came, which I found odd. Things that make you go, but that's not today's discussion. So once they took over in 1979, Iran shifted the regional proxies. Support for Hezbollah, other anti-U.S. groups, and that helped fuel the regional instability. They're not dumb. They realize through proxies we can disrupt governments, we can create chaos, and we don't have to lift a finger. We'll just supply these militants with weapons and arms. And that's how they have lived pretty much since 1979 in creating instability. Now, they did have a war with Iraq, and I'm going to discuss that briefly here in a second. But some of the issues they've done to us, 2019, the downing of U.S. drone by Iranian forces. And actually, let me do this. 1979, 1981, we had the U.S. embassy hostage crisis. Iranians held 66 Americans for 444 days, and the impotence of the most pathetic president in my lifetime, even worse than Obama, is Jimmy Carter. There's never been a more spineless man in the history of our nation, in my opinion. Yeah, well, Obama's close. Then in April 1983, the U.S. Embassy bombing, Beirut, Iran backed Islamic Jihad. They killed 63, including 17 Americans. October 1983, the Beirut Marine Barracks bombing. Hezbollah, with IRGC support, killed 241 U.S. troops. See, Iran is the one doing this. Just because we're there in a country, if Iran didn't like it, that's fine. But what do they have to do with Lebanon? What do they have to do with these other countries? Because they were, through their proxies, creating chaos. You know, that's like us through our proxies creating chaos in Mexico or Canada. You know, it's just not right. It does. I mean, you may not like us there, but they were the ones doing this. Now, maybe some of our policies they did not like. But these people who say, oh, it's America, evil, great Satan. I'm like, what the hell are you doing in this country? Go live in Iran then. See how quick you like being thrown off the roof, gauge for Iran. But you get my point. Then September 1984, the U.S. Embassy annexed bombing in Beirut. Hezbollah killed 24, including two Americans. July 1989, the killing of Colonel William Higgins by Hezbollah, backed by Iran. They executed a U.S. Marine. These are all acts of war, people. But yet we've never gone into an official war with Iran. And maybe some of these are made to bed. Not quite, William. Okay, I'll buy that. But don't tell me not every single one isn't. You know. July 1988, a Navy ship did the USS Vincent's, very infamous. In fact, I know that ship. You know, I've been on that ship. Like JFK. I knew JFK. He was my friend. I knew the Carl's Vincent. I was on that ship, not stationed on there. But the U.S. Navy shot down a civilian flight. They killed 290. And obviously that's going to escalate tensions. Now, this I can say from deep down in my heart, I don't think we're killing civilian air flights on purpose. But, you know, with the CIA involved, who can tell nowadays? That's where I do align with libertarians on this, the CIA and things, and some of the conspiracy theorists. Like, that's CIA. Why do I know that? They sat there and established the dictatorship of Panama. It wasn't the CIA, it was U.S. military intelligence, which the CIA eventually conquered in an internal battle. So the Navy shot down the civilian flight, killing 290. But here's the kicker. The U.S. paid $62 million in compensation. Other countries never pay compensation when they screw us. And Mr. G-Man is here, and I will bring him in a moment. Let me finish this section here, and G-Man can listen and give us his thoughts. G-Man, I am talking about individuals' acts of against us from Iran. So in 2011, the Saudi ambassador plot, the IRGC planned an assassination in Washington, D.C. It was foiled by the FBI. 2021, the Ali Nijad kidnapping plot. Iranian intelligence targeted a U.S.-based journalist, disrupted by the FBI. December 2019, a K-1 base attack in Iraq. Iran backed Kataib Hezbollah, killed a U.S. contractor. January 2020, Al-Assad air base attack. Iranian missiles injured over 100 U.S. troops. See, Iran wants to control and dominate and take over the region. So they feel it's their right to go in there with these proxies. And they don't care if it's a different country. They don't care about causing chaos there because they eventually want to rule that country. They loathe the Saudi Arabians. The Saudi Arabians loathe Iran. And ironically, in this battle right now with Israel, they're getting no support from any of these nations in the Middle East. That speaks volumes. So October 2023 through February 2024, the U.S.-based attacks, Iran-backed militias launch 170-plus drone rocket strikes. These IEDs, through the conflicts we had in Iraq, and I'm with my producer, Big John, I'm like, why are we there? You know, if there's a good reason, then we can have certain aspects there to help with the government, help American interests. But I was like, enough of having the troops here. Get them out. But the point is a lot of these dead soldiers or injured for life soldiers, these IEDs were from Iran. October 18, 2023, Al-Taf, Syria, injured 20-plus U.S. troops. Why am I saying all this? Because people are trying to paint a picture. U.S. bad, Iran innocent. We are destroying their people. You know what? That's a casualty of war. I don't see any of these people, whether Dave Smith or anybody else, talking about, yeah, they shouldn't be killing Jews. People say, oh no, I'm compassionate with the Jews, but damn those Jews. You know, no, they shouldn't be doing that to Israel. Damn Israel. You know, they say it in passing because they're supposed to, but they don't care. You know, January 28, 2024, Tower 22, Jordan, killed three U.S. soldiers. See, this is stuff you're not going to hear by the mainstream media or other podcasts. August 2022, John Bolton plot. Well, you know, there's some here who would have gotten that. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. You know? They offered $300,000 for his assassination. Yeah, the DOJ reported that. November 2024, the Trump murder for hire plot. IRGC's Farhad Shakiri targeted Trump. June 2025, the U.S.-based attacks near Iraq, Iran-backed groups use missiles and drones. So let us bring Mr. G-Man in here and get his thoughts. Hey, G, how you doing?
Hey.
Oh, I'm not going to say where you're at. I don't want to give Iranians a spot.
Yeah. I'm somewhere in Southern California.
So, G, I was just giving the rundown on all these hostilities that the mainstream media, Democrat podcasters, Libertarian podcasters, Green Party podcasters, Tucker podcasting, even our side. They don't, Candace Owens, they don't talk about how we've been attacked. So actually, so it's everybody who's literally got TDS or our anti-Senates, don't talk about how we have been in an unofficial war with Iran since 1979. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, how many cheeks do we turn, right? I mean, you talked about all these different attacks on us, and it's just mind-boggling how we just take it, right? Because we don't want to cause a greater conflagration in the Middle East, which up until about 3 weeks ago was the likelihood. But now I'm looking at how weak Iran is. And like you said, no one's coming to their aid only because they're weak, right? It's precisely if Iran had been strong enough and been able to fight back, then maybe they would have more people on their side. But people ally with strength and not weakness. And so I think that's what we're seeing right now, is that Iran is isolated, like you had mentioned. And I just don't see how, you know, they're going to come out of this ahead. So Trump was asked the other day, well, is your policy regime change? And he avoided the question, right? He just said, we don't want them to have nuclear weapons, which is the right policy. But I'm not sure regime change is the right policy. And I'm glad he didn't say that was American policy, because you can do regime change, but that doesn't mean you're going to come out with something better, as we saw in the Arab Spring. You remember in 2011, I don't know if you talked about that yet, but 2011, all these countries are overthrowing their leaders. Yeah, and it's like, well, I don't think they're better off. Even though Obama was saying, well, just like here in America in 2008, we're having revolution all across the Middle East. Yeah, that didn't turn out so well for them.
Right. I did mention that, but I mentioned it from the perspective of in the Arab Spring. I'm glad, because I couldn't remember the name. What is the only country that was screaming and protesting and begging for U.S. help for regime change, and none came? Iran. The only country that Obama did not do anything. You know, things that make you go, And I'm not implying anything, but I'm just saying nobody's ever bothered to look into that. Why? Because if you did, you were called a racist. Yeah.
Right.
But so right now, G, there's an ideological clash, obviously, with and I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but my belief is convert or die radical Islam that Iran is pushing, and it's rooted in their theocratic governance. And that goes against everything Western. That's what I've been talking about. And it's fueled by the competition for Middle East dominance. I don't think the United States wants Middle East dominance anymore. I think that ended in the 70s, but I think they want to be seen as a player. But so does Russia, so does China, so does Saudi Arabia, so does Iran. But my whole take is that's their region. They can fight it out themselves, but at the end of the day, it's not good if Iran wins, because we live in a global society now, and we have seen the spread of radical Islam. The United States of America does not mind sharing its country with other religions, but we are ruled by the Constitution, and we have clearly seen they don't care about that. So all this risk, it creates hostilities, and that creates volatility with high escalation potential. But you made a great point. In terms, they are at their weakest. They're like a bully right now that has bullied for years, and then the bully finally gets beat up, and he looks around for help, and everybody walks away. So that's what I've kind of been covering. But one of the issues
let me just bring this part up. So, and I think we referenced this last week on our podcast, is that Iraq and Iran fought each other for 8 years. It was stalemate. So their strength is relatively equal at the end of the 80s. So we marched into Iraq twice, 1991, and then again in 2003, and we conquered them in like, what, 3 weeks? To conquer the military, right? And then we gave the country back to the people. But if we did the same, I think Iran would fold really quickly. We're just seeing that with airstrikes alone. So I don't think we should do that. I've done a 180. I've split my ways from the neocons. Kamala Harris can party with the neocons. I don't think Trump and the rest of us should do that anymore. They can stay over there in their party. A neocon, just for those who don't really know, is an interventionist, but they're fiscally liberal. They're fiscally liberal and interventionist. So they'll go around and start wars, and they came over from the Democrat Party to the Republican Party starting in the 1970s. But they kept that strong liberal fiscal policy with them, which, you know,
which is why the Pentagon has so much, it can't complete an audit because they keep getting more and more money, you know. Right. And we're going to talk about that, G. I want to get your thoughts on the alleged Iranian plot to kill Trump. That was 2020 and 2024 Iranian plots. They were able to prove the 2024. That's been documented. You can check out even the mainstream media who does not support Trump has acknowledged that. There was no confirmation for 2020. It was October 2020. The DOJ charged IRGC individuals for plots against U.S. citizens, not Trump. But in 2024, they charged Farhad Shakiri, an IRGC operative in Iran, for plotting to assassinate Trump before the election as revenge for Soleimani's 2020 death. Now, the reason I want to bring this up at this point is to combine it with what you said. Now, deep in your heart, G, are you saying you've done a 180? Because I think most people are saying they've done a 180 because we don't need to play the interventionist. Israel has literally demolished them, you know, because let's remember, we took out Iraq not once but twice, but that was pretty much our Air Force and boots on the ground cleaned it up. It was the occupation, you know, that's when things went south. Why? Because our government was probably at its most corrupt and most vile there with the corporate cronyism, and they weren't, you know. And then democracy, look, people, I'm sorry, you may not want to hear this, but history has showed if you truly want to be democracy, you're going to have to remain in a country for 50, 60, 70 years, because democracy is never successful early on. We're going to talk about that with Panama, but eventually it will be. And when Bush was talking 5 years, I'm like, that's going to be complete chaos there, especially all right, with the religions. And that's what happened. But my point to say this is, I think a lot of people are saying, well, we don't need to be interventionists or neocons because the Israelis are doing it for us. And I'm in that boat. I'm not saying let's go bomb him if we had to, but we are in a unique situation. Israel has literally destroyed all their proxies. And I want to get your comment on that in a moment. But the truth of the matter is, this 2024 attempt on Trump, that's an act of war. So if we wanted to go bomb them, I think we have every right. They went after our president. That's factual. That came out with the DOJ. Now, they may say, oh, you got to prove it in court, et cetera, et cetera. You know, did they have in World War One when they shot that prince in Serbia, did they sit there and go, let's have the court settlement first? No, it's guns a-blazing. Your thoughts on it? I'm not saying we should go to war, but I'm saying that in and of itself is an act of war.
Yeah, I mean, if it's just a plot, right, but there's no real attempt, then I personally wouldn't go that far. I'm not going to say it's an act of war. Now, if Thomas Crooks, who still we don't know anything about that guy, and he had no social media presence or it was cleaned up, he had two cell phones, multiple bank accounts, foreign bank accounts, we need to get to the bottom of that, because was Iran involved with that guy or some kind of handler, right? I think there's still a lot of questions for him. But if Thomas Crooks was organized by some external agency, let's say it was Iran, then, yeah, that would be an act of war. But I don't think we should go to war over that.
No, I'm not saying we should, but I'm saying enough with the nonsense of pretending that nothing's happened, that Iran walks on water, you know, they pray four or five times out of love. Or, no, they want to kill us. And here's the other thing. I saw this in Panama. I was responsible for discovering a low-level spy, and it sounds dramatic. It was just a roach coach guy asking too many questions, and I reported him, you know. But technically, I turned in a low-level spy for Noriega. These despots, these countries, they all do it, you know, and our government has come out and says, yeah, Iran has these types of people here. So we are in this unofficial, now call it, what did they call it with the Russians? The Cold War. Why? Because we both had nuclear. Nobody wanted to go into actual real war, even though we came close, once or twice. But for people to sit there and ignore that and poo-poo it, I'm like, you are part of the problem. You don't want to discuss these things. You want to sit there and take one side and then crap on the other side with pretty much half truth. That's one thing I loathe, are half truths, you know? So let's get to the Ted Cruz, Tucker Carlson. Now my issue with that is somebody who served, somebody who understands at times what, and has studied, even though I was enlisted, what are the important factors when you're looking at an opposing government in terms of what's important versus not important. I'll be honest, population comes secondary, and it's important, but it's not your primary what you're looking at. You're looking at their government. How big, how strong, how deep is it? You're looking at their military. You're looking at their network proxies, meaning, okay, even if we take them out, what proxies do they have there to kind of still take shots at us? Afghanistan's a great example of what I mean by that. You know, we were there, we had wiped out the enemy, but it was literally next to impossible to take them out because of all the proxies Iran had in there, as well as just the Taliban in and of itself. So those are the type of things you're worried about. So when I saw that, I'm like, Tucker's not here to talk an issue. He's here to earn points. He's here to try to take Cruz out. And then, so he kind of like was, and all these losers, oh, you go, Tucker, you go. You know, that's how they all were, you know. And I'm thinking, great shot, Tucker. Perception, you won that point. But here's where Tucker lied. When he asked, well, what's the demographic made up? And he said, how many Persians, et cetera. And he was right. And Tucker kind of rolled his eyes or his whole body language. Like, and then he laughed. Ha! You know, he laughs that fake laugh. Ha, 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 you know, he was trying to push the point. You don't know what you're talking about, but he was right. And that in and of itself told me, Tucker, you're on a hate mission. Tucker's coming across, him and Candace and others. And I'm not saying they are, but they're literally coming across as anti-Semites. You know, and we're not going to discuss it, but it keeps in the back of my head. This guy has daddy issues. His dad lived in that world. His dad was part of those bad things, but he loved his dad dearly. And I'm like, you got daddy issues, bro. Yeah. And he's been living in a bubble for the last 18 months, surrounded by like-minded individuals. It's all he interviews, all that. And I'm not denigrating Tucker. I'm just telling you that's who he is. So he has an agenda, and this interview proved it out, especially when he pretended and played dumb. What? There's been an assassination attempt? Tucker covered the election. You know, he was there when these reports came out that the Iranians were looking to off Trump. You know, so for him to play dumb kind of exposed who and what he is. He's a lost soul who's got daddy issues, who just is just so full of hate for Israel. I'm not saying he's anti-Semitic, but he's got a deep hatred there because he condemns everything they've done to protect themselves and says nary a word that's believable when they get attacked and they suffer deaths. Because let's do one more point, G. Israel is people limited. They're not a country with 350 million Jews, you know, and right. And the Muslims know. You take a whole boatload of them out, and there's not as many to come back. You know, your thoughts on – I threw a lot at you, G. But your
no, thoughts. I think – I mean, I have a different take on Tucker. And, again, I mean, I've watched a few of his things, but I haven't done a deep dive into him. So what you're saying could very well be true. But my view is more he's a non-interventionist, right? He's more of an isolationist. So he's criticized getting involved with Ukraine. Now, I wouldn't have gone as far as he did with – you know, sitting there and interviewing Putin and Putin basically spreading his own propaganda. But I believe with this, I think he's also non-interventionist. He doesn't want to get involved into a wider Middle Eastern war, which I agree with. The problem is a lot of people who are just, they view things black and white, right? So they'll say, okay, well, we either completely uninvolved or we have boots on the ground in Tehran, which are like, no, there are many middle grounds. So Iran is working on a nuclear weapon, and when they get one, they will bomb Israeli cities. I mean, not Jerusalem, but every single other city out there. If they get more than one, they will nuke them, and they will kill millions of people, and that is a bad thing. So how do you stop that from happening without putting American boots in Tehran? And I think there is a middle ground. And so I look at Tucker and I go, okay, well, he's viewing this very black and white, and there are a lot of shades of gray that I think he can come at this with. So now, right. Ted Cruz's thing, I think, you know, I heard there was like some religious reference that the Bible says we need to protect the Jews. Like,
I don't know that
the Bible says that, but yeah. I think we need to protect our allies, and, you know, Israel are our allies. So I think that is important, but, you know, let's not make this scriptural, because now when you start quoting scripture,
you lose.
They're using on the other side. There's Twitter feeds, I'm sure, that will say, okay, well, Ted Cruz is declaring a crusade on Iran. And I think that's a very bad propaganda thing to use against us. So I think if Trump attacks, it's not going to be good for the MAGA movement, at least in the short term, because MAGA is isolationist or non-interventionist. Take your pick, but, you know, isolation is totally over here. Non-interventionist is maybe a little more, you know, involved.
You're right. We're going to talk about that. We're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. But my issue with Tucker is he wasn't there to debate or have a talk or discussion. He's picked a side, and now he's abusing his power, his popularity, to spread misinformation and half-truths.
Yeah, and he has political power. He's going to do that, right?
Well, actually, he does and he doesn't. There's a whole segment we're going to talk about many names that have gone to war with Trump, and they've lost. And the most recent being Elon, and the polls already show this is a battle Tucker is losing. Here's the thing about Trump. His foundation, right or wrong, you know, you can say he's fanatics for this. I view people in the Democrat Party who stick to the ideology, to the Libertarian Party who stick to the ideology, the Green Party who stick to the ideology, the neocons in our party who stick to the we got to spread democracy to every country. These are people who are unbending with their ideology, and that's not how life actually works. And that's when I have issues, because this is a very nuanced. This whole issue is very nuanced. I kind of lost my train of thought there, so let me get back to what I was saying. But my whole issue with Tucker – oh, yeah. So what happens is they're unbending, and Tucker's being unbending. Elon Musk was just a petulant child, and they went against MAGA – not MAGA, but they went against Donald Trump thinking they had the pull to destroy and splinter and corrupt MAGA. But all the polling shows Elon deleted his tweets. He's kind of apologized. Tucker's done the same thing, because they quickly realize Trump's base is not going to leave him. And we're going to talk about why. And it's not because it's blind loyalty. He's got the resume and track record, whether it's tariffs, whether it's no wars, whether it's creating an economy, for whatever reason, whether you don't like it or not or disagree or not, he's done it. And that Tucker's already apologized. Plus, I haven't followed up on it, but I think Tucker's got a kid that works for VP. Probably doesn't want him to lose his job, but some people are speculating his son is feeding him information. All right, so let's get to Iran's weakened state and the opportunity for change. So, gee, we were both alive. I was a child. We were both kids when Iran came to power. I remember my socialism class when the news broke that the Shah had fled. That's how big news it was. But I was in the military town at that point, you know, and it was big news. But since then, Iran has been a linchpin of that region. They've controlled it. We've never seen a time since the Khomeini took over and the religious theocrats took over where their proxies have been destroyed. And here's the thing about G mentioned the Iran-Iraq war in 1988. It was pretty much a stalemate. But since then, Iran has relied on their missiles and proxies to spread their fear and terror, you know. So there's questions about their military, and it's not seen as highly effective as one would have thought before we took Iraq out. But that said, so Israel's decimated what is called the Axis of Resistance proxies. Hezbollah, their leadership was taken out in September 2024, and their arsenal crippled, their Israeli strikes crippled them and reduced their threat. Hamas, obviously we saw Hamas, they were severely weakened by the post-October 2023 Gaza operations. The Houthis, they're still doing some attacks, but Iran's ability to influence and fund them and keep them going has been spotty at best. And then the Iraqi Shia militias, they have had reduced operational capacity after the U.S.-Israeli targeting of operatives and bases in 2023-2024. They pretty much wiped them out. Would you agree or disagree that this is the first time in history we have seen their proxies literally decimated all at once?
I would have never imagined. I mean, they've been attacking Israel for a long time, and they took them out in basically the last 2 years. So, and remember, one of them was a beeper attack. I don't know how they figured that one out, but that was amazing. I mean, both Ukraine and Israel have been very unique in their approaches to warfare nowadays. So, yeah, I think it is. It was in the 1967 war where just about every Arab nation around them
six of them attacked them, they surrounded them, and Israel still kicked their ass like it was nothing. In fact, our producer's on Big John. He's the one who informed me. See, Big John and I, we're like oil and water when it comes to these politics, but that guy teaches me a lot of stuff. And he was the one that I think it was Go to Meir, where they said, if they come out, you better help us and give us our weapons, because the U.S. was hedging all that because they didn't know what to do. And said, you don't give us these weapons, we have nuclear capability. If they're going to genocide us, we're going to genocide everybody. Here's your weapons.
I think they do have a Samson-type backup plan, right? If everything goes to hell, it's like, okay, it's time to take out everyone. I hope it never gets to that spot, because that will be bad for the whole world, not just that region. But, I mean, I would imagine that the population differential between the Jews and the Arabs right now, the Arab countries around, is like even greater, right, than it was in 1967. And still Israel's kicking their butt. And so, I mean, just imagine, they flew their planes all the way to Iran, and they have complete airspace control of a country that's, I don't know, 1,000 miles away, 2,000 miles away. I mean, that is insane. Those just have to take off, fly over there, and they have total airspace dominance. I mean, that is amazing what Israel's done.
I mean, even Superman said, "Damn!" So their proxies. Yeah, our producer Big John just chimed in that Israel has 80 nuclear warheads. Iran has zero, but that's just it, Big John. All Iran needs is one, and they've already kind of implied it, if not directly said it, death the great state, and we want to genocide the Jews off the face of the earth. All they want is one. You know, it doesn't matter how many. You don't see Israel saying, "Hey, Iran, either give us this or we're going to drop a bomb." You know, that's what I mean by religious zealotry. You just went, you know, I mean, Jim Jones, "Hey, little boy, here's some Kool-Aid." Or Waco, Texas, "Come here. What's that? Let's blow those." You know, it's religious zealotry. That's always been the bane of God. It's not God, but those who profess to speak for him through themselves. That give religions a bad name. So their proxies done, have been done, destroyed. So then you have the failed missile retaliation. You know, they've done, now when I say failed, I'm not talking about 100%, but for the most part, 98-99% of their missiles fail. In fact, the Benny Hill moment, it's terrible to say it, but it's literally a Benny Hill moment. Remember when their missile couldn't make it and that poor Palestinian, doop, 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 boom, smash, you know, and it was caught on film. I mean, that epitomized the lack of, what I'm trying to say is, that's when the world realized, damn, we thought they were something. They ain't all that. It's like a woman, hot woman, when they take off their makeup, damn. I'm terrible, I know. what you brought up, there were other missile attacks. So let me run this down, because I like to bring receipts. October 2024. Israel took out Hamas's Ismail Haniyeh, and Iran launched 180 missiles, and most were intercepted. It was minimal damage. Then in 2025, they retaliated for Israeli strikes on Natanz and IRGC leaders. Iran fired, suppose they don't know the exact number, but anywhere from 100 to 400 missiles, and it depleted 35 to 50% of their stockpile, and 80 to 90% were intercepted. In other words, America, it was a fail for Iran. It caused like 3 to 8 deaths and minor damage in Israel. And their takedowns, as G said, the beeping pagers. People, remember, this wasn't like a one or two or few. They took out 3,000 operatives. This was an event. This was an operation done in stealth mode over a couple of years, including Nasrallah's aides. And it was done in a single day. Other tactics, precision airstrikes, booby trap devices. So the Israelis, when they want to get a job done, they're getting a job done. So, G, let me ask you this. Looking at what's happened, they've taken out the proxies, not to come back, because they keep killing leaders, even the secondaries that rise to power, and then the beepers. Do you think, because I believe, I'm not saying it happened, but it wouldn't shock me if we came out 10, 15 years later and we found out this was Israel's plan. We're going to take out the proxies. We'll do this. We'll do this. Then we're going to go after the big dog himself. So do you think this is maybe part of a larger game plan, or do you think they're just taking advantage of the fact that their proxies are pretty much down? Their military, their missile capacity now is at its lowest. Because every time they launch a missile now, they're able to key in on and find out where those launchers are and take them out.
Yeah, I think they've taken advantage of what happened on October 7, 2023. But I think they've had people in place, right? Because think about that. They had beepers sold to – I mean, who uses beepers anymore? I stopped that in 1998 or whatever. But apparently they still use
– They use them because, unlike phones, it's harder. You can't, you know, you can't follow and track them.
Right, that's right. There's no GPS. Yeah. But no, in order to sell those, you need to have some guy who's selling it to these people, right? So there's a supplier, and it must come through one person. So they've had that guy in place, because you don't just trust any vendor, you know, coming off the street, hey, I got some beepers for you. Your accent sounds a little Israeli. No, I'm totally Jordanian or whatever. Like, okay, no, they got that guy in place, and then they must have hatched this plan, and they said, okay, you're the trusted informant or the double agent or – without me a double agent or a single agent, let's sell it through you. So I would say, as far as that goes, I think, you know, that was completely, you know, they had the people in place for a decade. Now, as far as Iran, this whole thing, like, do I think Iran is 2 to 6 months out having a nuclear weapon? Well, that's kind of convenient that it's happening just a couple years after 2023. So I do think there's a little bit of a Colin Powell sell job here, saying, oh, if we don't do it now, then there's going to be an attack soon.
Well, hold on, G.
I think there will be an attack, but I don't think it's that imminent, in my opinion.
Nobody knows, but here's some information. We have helped speed up their process of being able to become nuclear armed, because our own side ignored these treaties. And I'm speaking about Obama and Biden. Obama's 2016 JCPOA gave them $1.7 billion in cash, delivered via what, G? In the middle of the night, in the dark, pallets, you know. So they've been criticized for funding it, Iran's nuclear program proxies, and that came through a Senate report in 2018. Now, for those of you who are wondering, what is the JCPOA? I'm glad you asked. That is the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, and that's a 2015 international agreement aimed at limiting Iran's nuclear program in exchange for sanctions relief. And so that happened in 2016, and it was continued by Biden. And here's the kicker. Hey, our inspectors are coming in. We're coming in 24 days from now. Hey, Bob, man, they're coming in. Come in and say, let's clean up the room. Yeah. Let's take it from this room here, put it over to this room. Well, why is that? They're only allowed to inspect this room. That's what it literally allowed them to do. So we helped fuel this, because we did not enforce the treaty and gave them, in essence, the Obama regime pretty much allowed Iran to do what they wanted. Same thing with the UN. It's like common sense was out the window. These are religious zealots. So I will push back by saying they are the closest they've ever been. Why? Gee, there's one thing about saying in the 80s with technology, how it is versus today and the billions they've gotten and how much softer and spineless America has with the sanctions and these agreements and enforcing them. They just have chosen not to. Biden. Right. 6 billion hostage deal too. Really, 6 billion? You know, and it came out that that was used for both the fund, not only the nuclear pursuits, but their proxies. And by 2024, per the, again, the IAEA, earlier in the show I said what that stood for, and I forgot already, but it's a UN organization that studies and handles this stuff. They said Iran enriched uranium to 60%, you know, near weapon grade, closer to nuclear bomb than ever. This is not the U.S. This isn't the neocons. This isn't the Israelis. And this is the UN, which, per every decision they've made against Israeli, hates Israel. They themselves said this. Your thoughts?
Holy inflation, Batman, is my thoughts. Because Obama, $1.7 billion, Biden, $6 billion.
I know. It's like, I apologize, Obama. I thought you were the bad guy here. Freaking Obama. I mean, freaking Biden. Yeah.
Biden wasn't president. It was his advisors. I mean, you see how clueless these guys are, because Biden's like, remember, it's exactly a year ago. They're at the concert. And you got Kamala dancing like this. And Biden. Yeah. And then there was some guy in a dress dancing. Okay, let's not go there. But I will just say that, I think Trump, I think his goal is clear. He just wants Iran to give up its nuclear enrichment, right? I don't know if they're 2 months out. I don't know if they're 6 months out. But I agree with you. They're closer than ever. But they could still be 2 years out. Israel's making an imminence so that Trump goes in there and says, strike while it's hot. You got to do it now because we're the only ones who can get that deep in that bunker with a bomb. But I think Trump doesn't want to go there. He wants to say, okay, we don't want a 24-day notice. We want a one-day notice. We're going to fly in and we're going to see what's in that facility. And they can't hide stuff in 1 day. So along with that, it's the art of the deal. I think, again, Trump always looks at things as deals, and he goes, okay, we will give you the biggest deal ever. No one's ever seen a bigger deal like what I will give you. I think that's what he's trying to do with them, and I think he wants to keep those guys in place because, again, we don't know who would replace them. So keep that regime in place.
Well, we do.
And have the one-day notice. We'll be in at any time, and we're going to make sure you're not enriching uranium.
Yeah, we do know who some of the factions are that can vie for power and will vie for power. But so my whole point was, you know, we've been lax with their nuclear want and desires, the oversight, the lack of oversight has helped put us to this. But you made a point, and I'm going to counter with this point. Chance always favors the prepared mind. You got to give Israel their due. Here's their opportunity, and they're jumping on it. We live in a country that is okay with the death of our soldiers because we don't want to act or with the rules of engagement favor the enemy. The Israelis, they're like, man, we are in limited numbers. Jews are us, does not have a big count. So we got to take advantage of these situations. So, but the Iranian people, they're ready for regime change. In 2022, there were protests over 150 cities. This is in a totalitarian country. So that alone in and of itself shows that there is fight with these people. But can the Iranians forge their own future? I want to talk about Panama here real quick. You know, these morons never follow history with their hate. They're going to bomb! They're going to bomb! You know, well, let's look at Operation Just Cause. Gee, are you familiar with Operation Just Cause?
I'm ready to learn.
Operation Just Cause was in 1989 when United States of America ousted Manuel Noriega's corrupt narco regime, which Noriega's regime annulled the May 1989 election from the duly elected government. On a side note, I was interrogated. I was on the spook ship in Panama. They put me in a room. As I'm looking around, classic television moment, chair in the middle of the room, a Navy ship. I'm sitting there, and I'm not stupid. I go, these mother bleepers, they're going to interrogate me. They think I'm a damn spy. And it wasn't the government or even the department. It was a dumb, stupid Lieutenant JG intel officer who probably thought, he's Panamanian, you know, we're getting ready, you know, the word on the street, or at least in the military, something's going to happen here in a week or two. But anyway, they ousted him in Operation Just Cause, and they reinstalled the duly elected Guillermo Endara rest in peace, sworn in on a U.S. base in Fort Clayton. No different than the military intel at Rodman Naval Base telling Torrijos they need a leader, and Torrijos became a dictator. But this was a duly elected individual. And Darra had won the vote by a landslide. Noriega came out on it. So once they toppled it, they let that government get installed. Now, here's what you need to understand, Americans. You know, we who live in the greatest country in the world make a lot of wrong assumptions about the rest of the world. Democracy takes time. And Darra was out of his depth in some ways. He was a college professor, I believe. Corruption ran rampant. Economic recovery was, you know, it was a mess. You know, and people started to lose faith. But they had free elections in 1994, and they sustained the democratic governance, and it solidified Panama's transition to a stable democracy. In fact, Martinelli, the president there, brought Panama to its greatest economic heights. Of course, it was still corrupt. He favors his buddies, et cetera, et cetera. But it's no different than in this country. I mean, my God, gee, don't you wish that – shouldn't Nancy Pelosi be running the hedge fund? I mean, she's better than any hedge fund manager out there. So don't talk to me about corruption in other countries without looking at our own. But the point is Panama became a stable democracy. Is there corruption there? Yes. Is there influence by outside forces? Yes. No different than these United States. That's why when people say regime change, be careful what you wish for. We say it in a negative sense. But gee, do you think they wanted that regime change in 1979? And look what it got them. So that's it's right. Unpredictable on both sides. But the point is, you've got to let the people got Khomeini in power, you know, when he usurped the Shah, and they immediately regretted it, especially the women. The Iranian people want a new regime. Now, we know that Israel, they want regime change, and they would like the control regime change. I think Trump, it's just giving us hogwash. Oh, I don't want regime change. I want nuclear regime. I think deep down, Trump knows, hey, regime change would be best. But we've seen the downside of regime change. And I think Trump understands that. But I think Trump's goal would be to mirror Panama, is to enable Iranians to freely choose their future with the U.S. as a neutral party that ensures fairness and preventing external powers, Russia, China, Israel, the CIA, our own, from exploiting a weakened Iran to impose who they want. Now, what I said is tenuous, or it's shaky. Not in the fact of what I said being shaky, but when there is any change in the government, it's always shaky in countries that have gone this type of situation that Iran is going through. What are your thoughts on what I said about Operation Just Cause, reinstalling the elected government? And I'm going to give you some examples here of people who could lead this country. But real quick, this is not just wasn't Panama. Grenada, 1983. Now, granted, that's a little old island, but the U.S. invasion removed the Marxist junta and restored the pre-coup elected government. You know, in Haiti. Now, Haiti's been mixed results, but we've removed the and reinstated the civilian duly elected governments there. So this has happened. And that's my whole issue with the other side. They don't bring these up saying, well, it could happen. They just wanted to go, you know, Trump bad, America bad, Iranians, you know, they fart unicorn farts. You know, that's the story they're telling.
Yeah, I mean, I just think everything that's shared here, I mean, look at Iraq, right? So Iraq is a stable democracy now. Now, I just don't like the fact that we had to go through a very bloody years of occupation.
Do you really think it's stable? I think it's very shaky still.
Well, it's stable enough for now. I mean, but you're right. It will just take one strong man to get in there, and that's the problem. So when you have revolutions that are – and I just look through history, revolutions that are led by the young – well, the young, we know about liberal and conservative, right? Like, when you're young and you're not liberal, you don't have a heart. But if you're older and not conservative, you don't have a brain. I mean, you learn along the way that, you know, centralized economics doesn't work. You got to let the free market system work. But that's not what the young people will come in and do. So that doesn't mean they'll turn socialist or communist. That could also be fanaticism like we've seen. And it could get even worse. So, you know, it will depend on who has the guns. I mean,
right.
If you're waiting for Iran to overthrow its own, you know, the people to overthrow its own government, Then it's going to be who has the stronger guns and who has more of them. Now, if we go in there, which I'm not advocating or support that we do, we could form a stable environment to say, okay, no, we've got the biggest guns. It comes down to the guns. We've got the biggest guns. We will stop you from fighting each other.
It wouldn't be us. It would probably be a UN type thing. Right. I want to keep moving here because Big John pinged me about 15 minutes ago. You're at an hour mark. Gotcha, buddy. Yeah. Good point. So real quick though, I agree with you. I think it would be more of a UN peacekeeping, but I think the big hope, the big positive, the big track record that history has shown us in the 60s and 70s under the Shah, Iran embraced Western lifestyles. And when I say Western, maybe I shouldn't say Western, but it was pretty much Westernized country. They invest fashion, education, secular culture, and yet they were practicing Islam. And that's contrasted with their post-1979 Khomeini's oppressive theocracy. And 80% of Iranians, including 70% of the urban youth, they favor a secular governance balance, and they're rejecting the zealot-driven oppression. And that comes from from 2022 with the hijab protests under 50 cities and 80% support. And that comes from Gamma. That's a nonprofit group that does this type of polling in Iran. And so at the end of the day, I think they have experienced Western culture. And I'm not saying they have to have a Western culture, but they have the capacity to not go back to that theocracy, and they don't want to. Because look, 10 to 20% is clergy-based and loyalists, and they're ruling the 80% of the country. You know, and that 70, 80%, they don't want that regime anymore. Now, here's some of the leadership options, G. I need you to give me not literally, but a thumbs up, thumbs down, or your thoughts on this. So first of all, there's Reza Pahlavi. He is the Shah's son, exiled in the U.S. I saw him interviewed by Patrick Bet-David not once but twice, and he seems pretty content and happy living in the U.S., a fat life with the billions of Shah stole from the country that he's been living off. But he's starting to make waves. He's starting to use social media. He's like, I'm with you, people, etc., etc. So that's one option. He could be a transitional figure because he's a monarch. Be careful what you wish for with these monarchs, you know. Then there's the reformists. There's certain figures there that are moderate that could lead to gradual change. But some of these moderates have the old regime ties. So I'm not sure we'd want them. But again, it's up to the Iranian people. And then you got secular opposition groups that don't want the religious government, but they don't have enough pull, enough weight, enough ties to the power players to be taken. But then you have grassroots leaders. And at times, it's these grassroots leader that emerges and galvanizes. This is part of that 80% that is down, is not down with zealots controlling them. So looking at the westernized country from the past, looking at some of these options, do you think they have the capacity to take the reins? And we would have to work to keep Israel's influence out. But do you think they have the reins, the capacity to move forward as a new government, new country?
You mean the grassroots leaders?
Any of them. Who would you sit there and look at?
Well, I mean, I would look at the grassroots leaders because that if there's a movement going on, then the majority of the people who are forcing that movement or pushing that movement, they're going to support the grassroots leaders. Now, the problem I have with the Shah's son is that it's going to be like, okay, we're rewinding back to a dictator. The Shah was a dictator. I mean, maybe – and then it will just look like they're a U.S. puppet. And so that whole perception would be bad. So I think the grassroots leaders, but America has to get in there and say, okay, we want to work with you. We want to make you prosperous. You got a lot of oil in underneath your feet. And you know what? Democracies thrive in prosperity. They don't thrive in poverty. And that, so we just have to, and Trump's smart. He actually said when he went to Saudi Arabia, Iran, you need to give up your nuclear weapons and you will become rich. We will make so many amazing deals with you. You will become rich. So, I think the grassroots leaders is the way to go. But again, you're totally rolling the dice. You don't know who's going to come out of that group.
Right. My whole point is, it's not like there's nobody there. There are factions there. There are people there who, I mean, you don't have these protests without organizers. We'd have to keep the CIA at bay, MI6 at bay, because UK still has interest there too. And obviously the worst of them would be the Mossad, because, people will rebel against masters after a while, and we don't need another Khomeini incident. So, like Panama, Iran's people, I think, could select their leaders if the regime's grip weakens, and I believe it is weakened. I believe whether we like it or not, Israel's going to take out Khomeini. I think Trump is being politically correct here with the terms he uses, but there's nobody in this country that I would see going, no. Gee, we need to keep the Khomeini there. He's a good guy. He's a good guy. Good guy, say. You know, he's worth a couple billion, per some sources, because he's like the Shah did. He's just ripped off the country. What's it saying? Corruption and absolute, or whatever. I mean,
absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yeah, religious leaders are no different than regular leaders. Let's go to our final phase here, and I'll try to wrap this up in the next 10-15 minutes. So, and this is about the politics of what I call the politics of nonsense. Those Dave Smith, Tucker Carlson, John T. Georgopoulos, tossing in my producer in there. I'm just kidding, bitch, John. But all these people, they're like, that's not what I voted for when Big John's defense, he didn't vote for Trump. But that's it. That's not what I voted for. That's not what I voted for. Look, my issue, G, is let's take the tariffs. For 40 years, Trump has been transparent, advocating tariffs, implementing them successfully, and they're bad, inflation go up, jobs lose. You know, and it could still happen, maybe. We're not stupid enough to say it won't, but it hasn't. Then there's Iran's nuclear threat. That's 40 years of the tariffs. He's that's what he campaigned on. He also campaigned for 15 years. Iran cannot have nuclear weapons. So these people, that's not what I voted for. Why are you lying? That's what, I mean, it's critics. Voters didn't want this. And they're saying that's the MAGA movement's turning on Trump. No. We in the MAGA movement knew that's what we were going to get. You know? So my issue with this is Trump's been transparent. He from day one, consistent. To me, that in and of itself debunks most of these critics. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, he is absolutely anti-nuclear Iran. I think where the inconsistency comes in, but again, he's been consistent here too. Like, we will bomb ISIS, we will end them, right? He bragged about that, and he could end Iran's nuclear program with a couple big bombs here and there, and then call it a day, right? So, I mean, I would say that's consistent as long as he doesn't put boots on the ground. That would be inconsistent with what he was. I mean, he criticized Iraq, the nation building that we did there in 2003. And remember, even on the Democrat side, Hillary lost the primary in 2008 because she voted for the war before she was against it, right? And Obama came out saying, I was always against the nation building. So I think Trump is going to stay consistent in terms of no boots on the ground.
I agree. All right, so let's talk about MAGA. Are we splintering or not? I believe MAGA remains a united force. We have our internal debates. We've had him on. We talked about this, remember, with your friend. I'm drawing a blank. The woman she married, the English guy. God, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. Rachel.
Yes, I apologize, yeah. Rachel. Yeah. You know, where we didn't see eye to eye on everything. So we had these debates, the other side says, oh, they're splintering, you know, Tucker Carlson, even Steve Bannon. You're going to splinter and destroy MAGA with what you're doing, President Trump. And they're predicting inevitable war. So a June 2025 Gallup poll shows 75% Republican approval, which I'm assuming extends to MAGA, you know. So Carlson's war fears, he's echoed that on social media. I mean, they're like, a fait accompli, they say. They're acting as if this is a done deal. But I think they're falsely claiming voters oppose Iran's containment just because they don't want it. I think at the end of the day, there's nobody in MAGA who doesn't view a regime change from Iran as a good thing. We're conflating that with boots on the ground. You know, we don't want boots on the ground, but we'd love to see regime change because since 1979, Iran has been killing Americans with the help of Joe Biden and Obama. And I'm sorry. That's my belief. You give them $7.5 billion and they use that to fund their proxies, you're contributing to them killing Americans. And Obama was the worst. Gee, you may not realize it, but the rules of engagement for our troops literally made them hostages to when they were attacked. And what that means is, when they're attacked, they got to confirm, they got to call back, we're getting fired on, this, that. You know, it can take minutes. And in war, minutes are a lifetime. You know, So I think that we are not splintered. Your thoughts?
I'm not completely sure I agree with that over this Iran issue, but I do think that if we bomb, then we'll come right back together. I mean, a month or two will go by, but I think everyone will come right back together. Because what's the alternative? That we support Governor Newsom? No, I think everyone who supported Trump will say, okay, we did the bomb. We didn't agree with him, but okay, we'll just move on and we agree with everything else, right? So I think there might be a temporary split. So I'm at odds with you on that one, but I think we'll come right back together in the end for the midterms.
Man, I hate to do this to the G-Man. I mean, he's my good friend over there. You know, Super G-Man. Bollywood's latest superstar here.
This is why we're fired up, right? Because we don't agree on everything all the time.
So, again, per a June 2025 Gallup poll, 75% and 80% via social media sentiment per Axios says that MAG is aligned with Trump. You know,
I didn't say what the split would be. I predict it will be 75-25 right around there.
There you go, Obama. Okay. So, now Trump is also a merciful leader. You know, Tucker's already apologized. Trump will welcome him back. Steve Bannon, actually, I didn't confirm it because I was researching this, but I believe he was going to the White House this week. We'll talk about some of this, which was blew my mind because I haven't heard Trump say anything good or bad about Steve Bannon. Like, he fired him. That's the last we heard. Marjorie Taylor Greene opposed him. You know, she's kind of toned down. Candace Owens, there's no toning her down. She's gone forever. But I don't think she was ever on Trump's radar of people. She's like a Laura Loomer type in Trump's eyes. But Jack Posobiec, you know, the former Navy intel officer who has a few million followers, has great influence, he's already kind of pushed back. Alex Jones, I think that guy's for clicks. He's going to say that that the actors are doing this. It's not Israel. It's not Iran. It's actors. Yeah. But Elon Musk, we saw how that turned out. And Trump's like, I'll take a call. You know, Megyn Kelly hated Trump. She went and endorsed him. Glenn Beck, the same thing. I'm going back a little bit, but I'm just trying to show over the years, these are people who have opposed Trump and lost. They did not gain the support. And so when Tucker Carlson and Alex Jones and these people say this nonsense, I'm like, you're not being truthful. You know, okay, be a G and say 2075-25. Now, to his forgiveness, he forgave Hillary Clinton. Why? He did not prosecute her after he kept – remember the whole lock her up?
You know that.
Mitt Romney.
He'd be in jail.
Mitt Romney stabbed him in the back more times to count, gave him the 2018 endorsement. Ted Cruz. Become one of his staunchest allies. Marco Rubio became Secretary of State. And then there's Rand Paul. Rand Paul is on the outs. He was uninvited to the Mean Girl Party, I guess, you know. But, but you know, he endorsed him in 2022. So Trump has been forgiving. You know, look at North Korea, the 2018 Singapore summit with North Korea. The whole media tried to make that negative. He was seeking peace with that. So these are the reasons I believe he has MAGA's unwavering support. Again, I'm going to repeat this. A June 2025 Gallup poll, 75% and an active vote poll, 70% MAGA with Trump. It proves the critics wrong. And, you know, and it's a situation which I just wish other podcasters would be honest like we are. MAGA's strength, G, lies in loyalty. Sometimes it's blind. Every side, whether it's Green Party, Democrat, Republican, Trump, or Libertarian, they all have some blind followers. But Trump has delivered. No war. The tariffs are working as he said he would. He's been clear on the Iran nuke opposition. Remember the Abraham Accords, 3.5% GDP growth in 2018. He relates as a billionaire to the working class. He's been as transparent a president we've had since maybe Reagan. you know. So I view all this as divisive nonsense. When I look at Trump, I don't care for Trump the person and some of the things he's done. But Trump the president, I'm on board. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think he just speaks what he's, you know, thinking at the time. And I think that, you know, that's why he won re-election. If you remember Kamala Harris's accents along the way. So, Trump just came across more authentic. Now, he does say things that are just contradictory, yeah. Yeah. Even to himself, right?
Yeah.
And I just sit there and I go, you know, smack my head, the whole, you know, Jean-Luc Picard thing. But in the end, like, he's the more authentic person and probably the most authentic president we've had since, I think, Ronald Reagan, in my opinion. So, yeah, he'd get things wrong and he'll say things that are not correct. But again, he's speaking from the heart. And that's why I think a lot of people look at him and are willing to forgive him. And Trump, he holds some grudges, but he forgives most people. Like you said, that long list. I mean, even Rand Paul, you know, remember that line in the debate? Like, I didn't make fun of his looks, and believe me, there's a lot of material.
He said like he's short or something. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and here's the most important one I did not bring up.
Yeah.
No war.
That's
U.S. isn't at war with Iran, despite what the critics state. And then you have the hypocrisy, G. Give me your thoughts on this. We got to stay out of Israel's affairs. They need to do their own things. We shouldn't be helping them. So Israel attacks Iran. The U.S. needs to go tell Israel not to do that. We need to use all our might to stop this. I'm like, you don't, Glenn Greenwald, you don't want us in Israel's affairs because you say it's wrong, and yet you want us in Israel's affairs to do your bidding. Which one is it? That drives me up a wall. We are tied, my belief, G, and then tell me your thoughts and your belief. My belief is we are tied at the hip with Israel because they are the only duly elected government in the Mideast that is our ally, feeds us intel, and where else in the Middle East can a Christian, a Jew, a Muslim all be together at once and vote in an election? Only Israel.
You said duly, you're talking about democracy, because I think Saudi Arabia. Yeah, exactly.
No, Saudi Arabia
and some of those countries.
No, Saudi
I mean, there are allies.
Yes, but I'm talking about.
Right. Yeah, so
when push comes to shove, the Saudis, as we saw, allegedly with 9/11 will throw us under the bus for our own gain too. I don't trust the Saudis as far as can throw them, but they are one of our better allies. But what does that say about Israel? Now, Israel's the same way. Look, I have my issues with the Israel faith. Any faith that tells me, oh no, we're the chosen ones, I'm like, go take a hike. You know, I have my issues with Israel. Oh, we can do this alone. No, you can't. We cut off the weapons. You're done. You know?
We're not doing it alone. I mean, you're right in terms of, okay, what Israel does affects us because we're allies. And if they get into this long protracted war, we're going to get dragged in somehow at some level. But I do think Trump knew about what Israel was going to do in terms of bombing Iran. I mean, there's no way Bibi just says, okay, well, I'm just going to bomb and not inform Trump. I mean, I believe we actually evacuated our
– Yes, we did.
Yeah. So we knew – Trump's a strong man. I mean, he's going to say, okay, we support Israel. You do what you need to do. We're not bombing. So again, like, I don't think we're going to bomb. This is a art of the deal type of thing. But I think he wants Israel to do their thing and then pull back out. And this is just buying them 10 years. I mean, those proxies and Iran, they're just going to, unless Iran has regime change, those proxies are going to rebuild. They'll be back. You know,
right.
I don't know if we'll be 100% strength, but 10 years from now, they'll be back.
That's why we need the regime changing. Let the people rule and lord over themselves. What I'm saying, if Israel brings regime change, that's fine. Then we got to go in and let the people, like they did in Panama, like they did in Haiti. Of course, that regime, it was a despot, but it was a duly elected despot, you know, then Grenada. You know, so it has happened. Your final take on the latest MAGA supporter who's caught up to apologize to Trump, but his overall belief, Tucker Carlson and Ted Cruz, that whole debate thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tucker, he has a show. In the end, he's selling a show. He's selling his personality. I believe he's true to himself, but I think he takes positions, and this is what I've seen the whole time. I mean, I believe – in the end, that's why he left Fox News. He takes positions that are true to himself and not to any particular political ideology. So that's, I respect him on that. But they're out there. I mean, taking Russia's side, I mean, I'm not a, okay, Zelensky guy, because the guy, Zelensky obviously wants to continue war.
He's corrupt,
but,
too.
Yeah, I mean, but I respect Tucker for that, but I don't respect his opinions necessarily. Israel will be erased off the face of the earth if they don't do something. When, I don't know, but for Tucker to say, okay, well, let's just, you know, if we just left the area, then that whole, you know, roses will bloom in the Middle East.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like sticking your head in the sand, and then there will be a mushroom cloud one day.
It'll be a mushroom growing out.
Right,
not the kind we want. You know, my take is simple. He was playing the gotcha game, and maybe you're right, trying to sell tickets to, you know, to not metaphorically getting people to draw. But when he did the population question, as there's more important factors to know. But then when Cruz got it right on the demographics of the makeup, and he pretended like he didn't, he had a mission to accomplish, and MAGA shut him down. Again, I'm going to report it here specifically to Tucker versus Trump. 70% of MAGA voters sided with Trump over Carlson's anti-war stance at the vote. June 2025. Again, 80% of MAGA aligned accounts Trump backing Trump Axios. June 2025. We're close to closing it out, but before we close it out, a couple more topics here, real quick. Well, people are conflating boots on the ground with one bomber that carries a bunker buster. So yes, there will be an American in danger, more than one. It's called the pilot crew. Let me tell you this about military. We need a volunteer. 10,000 pilot hands are going to raise up because this is a moment of history. You know, the Glenola, the pilots of that, you know, they were proud of what they did. And the reason they need this bunker people, as y'all know, we'll repeat for the few who don't.
You're talking about Enola Gray?
Yes, Enola Gray. Those pilots, they were proud of what they did. Now, some of them may have had second that, man, we killed a lot of people. Enola Gay, yes. But they were on a mission, you know. But the point is why are they using this bunker buster? Because the Israelis don't have anything to get that deep. Now, there's reports coming out this week. We don't know if it's propaganda or there's legitimacy in it. I haven't researched it. That says that our bunker buster may not be able to get the job done. I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it. Drop two or three. I don't care. You know, I'm being serious. Drop two or three. That first one's going to create a crater, the second one a greater crater, the third one a greater crater. I don't care. But if that's the help they want us, nobody complained when Trump did it to where? Syria or Afghanistan? I can't remember when he did it when he first took office in 2020. But we have been in an unofficial war, and if that's the icing on the cake, go for it. That's my take with that. I don't want boots on the ground. I do want to see regime change, and for two reasons. They have been successfully killing us since 1979, but also 80% of those people. I come from an oppressed nation. I was born the American citizen, but I saw my relatives, my family members. I saw them oppressed. I know what it is to watch what you say, and you're here today, gone tomorrow, country. So if 80% of this country wants its freedom, then, hey, give them the – bunker buster. Yeah. Well, hold on. One of our viewers disagrees with us. Nice dream. Not a single dime to Israel. Okay, Nashim, I want to talk about this. We didn't talk about it real quick, but we have treaties. We have agreements with Israel. We're legally obligated to send them. We have signed treaties. So if that's the case, then stop the treaties. You know, because we have no right to tell a country, hey, here's this. You can't use it here, here, here. That's done before you sign the treaty. But I get what you're saying, because I felt like that after the Liberty incident, after we busted their spies taking our nuclear, I would have whacked them for 10 years from the perspective, we're not going to help you for 10 years. Now, you learn to live on your own. You do not cross the United States. But I get what you're saying. Your thoughts on Nice Dream there, G?
No, I mean, I think we need to support Israel, and we need to – I mean, if we look at all the USAID money that went out and it went to ridiculous things, I mean, none of those things are saving lives. But Israel, I mean, I don't agree with Nice Dream, but, you know, everyone has an opinion. That's fine.
Yeah, I guess I'm just cynical. I view most countries, if you let them, will be taken over by a despot, a dictator. Look at our own government, how the despots, or who would want to. I mean, is there any doubt that Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell, Chuck Schumer, they're not serving the Americans. They're serving themselves. You know, right. Mitch McConnell's on their way out. So if they could have it, they'd toss the Constitution and become kings tomorrow. So if this is a chance for the Iranian people, this is a once in a lifetime moment. And I'm glad Israel is taking advantage of it. So my whole take here tonight, G, has been to expose the half-truth and lies with the receipts, and we've done that. And I want to have an open debate. Am I right on every point I made? I think so, but I'm willing to change my mind. But I know how life works. I know how despots operate. I saw one in closing. Your final comments, G, before I close this show out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it will be interesting to see what happens here in the next few weeks. If Trump decides to bomb, I don't think it's the end of MAGA or the end of his presidency.
Oh, gee, hold on.
Tucker
hold
says.
On, yeah. 2 weeks. He gave 2 weeks. This is your thoughts on that. He's given that. He goes, Iran has 2 weeks.
From what? Earlier this week?
From today. He said that today or this morning.
Oh, today. Okay.
He goes, they got two weeks. So what does – okay, finish your thoughts. I apologize. But what are your thoughts on – it's not a few weeks. He gave him 2 weeks. What's he saying? What message
is
he
delivering? Like I said earlier, it's the art of the deal. Like, look, you come to the table – we will make you prosperous as a country, but, you know, we need to make sure you're not building a nuclear weapon. I think that's what it is. And J.D. Vance actually put out a tweet 2 days ago explaining exactly what's going on and further explaining Trump's thinking behind it. So that's why the 2 weeks are there. Otherwise, we would have thrown the bomb already. I mean, if Trump was, like, warmongering and being driven by neocons, which we know John Bolton isn't there, or Dick Cheney, or any of those morons, but he's not being driven by these guys. He's giving them, I mean, what is this, a third chance, fourth chance? I mean, I'm not necessarily agreeing that we do this. Maybe just drop the bomb at some point, but he's letting them have a way out.
Yeah, and G means drop the bomb on that nuclear facility that's out of
right.
the middle
yes,
of,
yes,
of nowhere. The, he's not saying not on a K-Rad. Yeah. But see, that's what Tucker and others are trying to imply. Yeah, they were going to put some ground, you know, all these in it. Yeah. It's not. All right, my friends. Heavy show. Again, I do my research. I bring the receipts. I need you guys to like and share this. Before that, I got to give my rant here. Like MAGA, I'm against war. But let's get real. Doomsayers, half-truthers, and liars are clouding the truth. Iran's regime has spent decades killing Americans, sowing chaos. Is that how you say it? Sowing chaos? And pushing a radical convert-or-die Islam. Unlike our knee-bending to the military-industrial complex with endless wars, Israel sets goals and gets it done. MAGA hates forever wars, and anyone saying otherwise is lying. Panama proves we can give people the opportunity to build a government by the people and for the people. Warts, corruption, and all. That's part of life. That's part of human nature. But let me remind you, we did this in Europe twice. Ask most Panamanians, including myself, and we'll tell you, giving people a chance to live free is a gift. With Iran on its knees, if Israel needs our bunker buster, by God or Allah, let's deliver it. And that's a wrap, friends, for the G-Man and me. Be grateful we live in the greatest country, flaws and all, and don't deny others the chance to build their own. Until next week, I am William Del Pilar. Take care and stay safe with Fired Up.